thanks for listening to Rip the Guts, a podcast about everything. In order to get to what we're talking about in this episode, we're going to first talk a little about causality as a primer. So, I want you to imagine you're at a sports game. Let's say you're at an American football game. Now, the way this game is scored, by the way, is a touchdown is worth 6 points. A goal kick converts any touchdown for an additional point, so 7 points total for a touchdown and subsequent successful goal kick. An extra point, as they call it. The clock is ticking down to the end of the fourth quarter. 3, 2, 1. And look at that, your team won. 21 points to 20. Congratulations. In the game, both teams scored 3 touchdowns. The losing team failed to score the extra point after their touchdown in the second quarter, so lost by a single point. Next to you are a couple of fans from the opposing team. One turns to the other and says, "Oh man, if only we didn't miss that extra point, we'd be playing overtime right now, and we'd surely beat them then." False. This faulty logic is ubiquitous in sporting, so it's the low-hanging fruit for me. Now, of course, some people who say such a thing surely know that this logic is fundamentally flawed, but say it anyway. Others truly don't understand, because they don't understand the fundamentals of causality, which is why this primer is necessary. Ticking off that inclusive box? And I don't mean to sound condescending, dearest listener. I'm only superior to my former self. So why is this logic flawed? Well, it's quite simple. Any event that takes place has an effect on future events. In the case of my example, if the losing team actually scored that extra point, the rest of the entire game changes. The score could still end with both teams on 21 points, but all the events that got to the original outcome would never happen. And you might ask, well, how does that work? And you might argue that there was a break in play either way after that missed or made extra point attempt, so the game would have ended up the same. False. The outcome of that made or missed extra point attempt changes all reality. It changes the whole world. It changes the entire future for everyone, everywhere. Maybe not immediately for, say, an uncontacted tribesman running around in the depths of some forgotten jungle. But the future is now changed for everyone based on the outcome of that kick. The entire course of reality is influenced by this moment. Think about the effect of that kick on the players in the game. The coaches, the fans, everyone there in that moment. Everyone's thoughts and feelings change immediately based on the outcome of that kick. Their thoughts and feelings are even changed if that kick gets taken a second later or a second sooner. Your thoughts and feelings influence your actions, influence your decisions, and influence your position in time and space. Of course, it's worth getting sidetracked by a related note here for a second, just to acknowledge the fact that, when presented with a choice, you will never make a different choice unless at least one event leading up to that choice was different. So if you live the life you're living now an infinite amount of times, and everything is the same until this moment, the next choice you make will always be the same. So in this case, the outcome of that extra point, even the moment of the attempt, changes what people think and feel, and in turn, those thoughts and feelings influence future reality. And so, you can see that future time and space is now affected. It's now different with any change. I've even heard it said that some, perhaps physicists, think or believe that these moments and moments of choice spawn off entire realities. As I am not a physicist, though, I'm not really qualified to speak on that, but from a philosophical perspective, it's something I consider even without the scientific theory. This flawed logic, or at least the lack of acknowledgement of what I've just maybe clumsily explained, is a cause for many problems I see. And oftentimes, I get a good laugh out of the broken thinking of others. I'm even irked by some of the things people say and do using broken logic as a basis. Irked more than anything else because of the effect these people are in a position to have or are allowed to have by others. What I mean by that is people that are, you know, don't know what they're doing, propping up other people who don't know what they're doing, and allowing them to have an effect on things they really shouldn't. And by the way, I'm quite happy for anyone at all to exist, but if you're on the lower end of cognitive function, you should probably just stay out of sight, out of mind, when it comes to the world stage. Because the things you say and do have an effect. And yes, we're back into perception and judgment, acknowledged. It just takes some effort on your part, dearest listener, to distinguish between things that I say that are just facts and things that I say that are just opinions. And remember, truth exists independently of us all. Another thing people don't like to acknowledge in this time, but the reality is that truth, fact, exists regardless of what anyone thinks or feels. Your thoughts and emotions have absolutely no bearing on truth. There is no your truth or my truth, there is only truth, and it exists without us. Something people are in dire need of remembering, or actually knowing in the first place, for that matter. So, I want to say a couple more things on causality before we get to the main event. And I also want to apply our better understanding of causality to the real world while we're at it. So, I remember watching something about D.B. Cooper not too long ago, some mindless garbage just to switch the brain off. On this television series, there was a man who explained that his mother's plane got delayed when she was on the way to meeting his father. And what he said was that D.B. Cooper almost interrupted my existence. So we got close, but in actual fact, D.B. Cooper is one of the people responsible for his existence. Might want to close your ears for this. Your father sperming your mother, even a millisecond sooner or later, is enough to cancel your entire existence. And even if it doesn't, that millisecond is enough to change your entire life, to give you a completely different life. The fact is that everything had to happen precisely as it has in order for you to exist here and now as you are. Anyway, this made me laugh because this is the kind of absurd things people say when they don't understand causality. It's such a glaring error, it sticks out like a sore thumb. And now on to the even more real world. Time for me to perhaps get attacked for thinking again. And that's an acknowledgement of the state of people right now. State of fact, someone doesn't like, then you get attacked. Trouble is that fact exists independently of us. So how can you possibly make yourself mad over a fact? How can you possibly be so broken that you have an adverse emotional response to fact? Mysteries of the universe. Okay, so let's rip the guts out of this hot-button issue. The issue of European colonialism and all that noise. And here we go, gonna talk about the so-called indigenes and stuff. And sorry, but humans are indigenous to this planet. The out-of-Africa theory of human evolution seems to hold water, so we're almost certainly all from the same place. Indigenous or not, it's just a line in the sand. Ironically, a line that would have never been drawn if not for the advancement of certain civilizations. The advancement of the evildoers. Loves me some irony. So, I live in this place where the indigenes are all up in arms about stuff. The incredible injustice of European colonization and the like. Again, more irony birthed by concept these indigenes wouldn't even have without Europeans. But anyway. And by the way, when I was growing up, people were just people. The conscious effort to divide is succeeding remarkably well around here. And it's so tempting to get into that issue here and now, but I'll save that for another time. So the base argument is that European colonization was bad. The details of these arguments don't matter. It's not important to my point, and usually just a waste of time and energy anyway. So let's use our better understanding of causality to squash the irrationality of this position. If Europeans didn't colonize this place, then you wouldn't even exist right now. So when you argue that Europeans should have left your ancestors in the Stone Age, left them to their own devices, What you're really saying is that you don't want to exist. Because if past events didn't go exactly the way they did, you have a 0% chance of existing now. These old grievances are so foolish, such a waste of time, and absurd. Now, if we were to set things straight, we can say, everything is settled. Your ancestors had their chance to settle things, but didn't. And I'm sorry that your ancestors weren't stronger, better, more powerful, or more evolved, but that's tough. That's reality. But on the bright side, you actually exist now. So come along and build something. Which is actually what many people try for anyway. But let's state things plainly. European colonialism was excellent for the species. It advanced us by a long way. So, some people suffered or got hurt or whatever. So what? Those people are dead and gone. And the people who caused that hurt and suffering are dead now too. We are not those people. And you are not those people. It really is just the choice between moving on and remaining stuck in the mud, ignoring the outstretched hand right in front of your face. Colonialism moved the species along, so either get with the program or get off the ride. Of course, it's more complicated than that. Some people still suffer or choose to suffer still, part of the integration process, growing pains, if you will, self-made victims of their own broken thinking. And a lot of people just want attention, just want something for nothing, and so on. Usual story, really. The fact of the matter is that the entire world has advanced, thanks, in part, to European colonialism. And there's a shift in thinking that is almost inevitably coming, but it's going to take the application of logic. It's going to take resisting the will to imagine. The imagination that you are somehow those dead and gone people, when in fact you're so far from being those people, you can barely even claim a connection. Of course, I'm talking about something more than just blood here. I'm talking about how the people that those people spawned started to be fundamentally different because the world changed. And people try to retcon the past all the time, but that dog don't hunt. Because in the same way we use causality to look forward, we use it to look back. And even when the cause of something is not known, we can use the effect to hone in on the cause. So the less advanced people of the past can't all of a sudden have been master astronomers or architects or incredible and cunning warriors or masters of peaceful living. A perfect pre-European utopia is sometimes how these cultures of old are portrayed. The truth is that many of these peoples were still just digging around in the dirt. And that said, you might argue, I'm only stating that European civilization is better out of some ill-conceived prejudice or something, when I'm doing anything but, because the advancement that came through European civilization has, objectively, and remembering that fact exists independently of us all, European civilization has, objectively, done far more good than harm on this earth. Of course, this has some relation to what we spoke about in episode 1. It comes down to frameworks for reality. Good news though, the main part of this episode will support some of the things I'm saying now, because within it is a more objective look at the human species in relation to the future. So there, we've applied the facts we just acknowledged about causality to the real world. We're now operating more rationally. By the way, I hope you understand that I'm playing a game with some of you, painting a target on my own head like this. There are some very good reasons I've done this, though. Not least of all, my own amusement. And no, not being amused by anyone's plight or suffering, I'm amused by people's reactions. I'm amused by the absurdity of other people's behavior. And yes, I could look to succeed by avoiding certain subjects or saying things some people won't like instead of inviting attack like this. But perhaps that's the difference between you and I, dearest listener. I don't fear. And by the way, what I mean by succeed in this context is financial success. I could pander and say a bunch of agreeable things to elicit money from you, but I'm not in it for money. If you want to give me money, sure, great. It has a decent chance of adding something to my life and might add to incentive, but I'm not doing this for money. And hey, while we're here, if you want to buy me a coffee or something, visit riptheguts.com. But anyway, a few words on the current state of play in the West, the current state of people. There is a world between the way people really think and the way people are portrayed as thinking by the likes of the media. And you know, people are actually afraid of speaking their minds, completely cowed by the media and the constant threat of attack and ostracization, all part of the social engineering machine, of course. Another subject for another time though, because it needs to change. Oh God, does it need to change. Anyway, this is somewhat related to what's to come in this episode, and it certainly can't hurt to assure you that it's fine and even good to think outside of what the machine is training you to think. And you know, for me personally, if I'm alive, I'm going to be true to a power greater than any and all humans, the power of logic and reason, the power of truth. And I'm not ever going to be afraid to speak. I've already given my life over, so what happens to me from now is of very little consequence to me. And since all thoughts are inevitable anyway, stopping me from speaking will do little more than placating primitive cognition for a moment. Someone who thinks like me will be along shortly. And ultimately, you'll be the one who's done the ugly thing. You'll be the one who is the agent of an agenda you don't see and don't understand. So, come at me, because this is a hill I'll happily die on. And look, I've already achieved something like nirvana, but I volunteer for this potential conflict because existing in a perfect or near-perfect state I find to be unstimulating in the long term. I like to fight, and having learned so much, it feels wasteful to not bring that knowledge to bear, to not use it in an effort to add something to the existence of others, if I can. And remember, I'm playing a game with some of you. I'm baiting you into proving me right on what I think about some humans. The funny part is that I can actually tell you this, and you'll probably still fall into the trap. Quite hilarious. Okay, so now that we've done some basic causality training, taken the crash course, and also filtered out some listeners, let's put a pin in the subject and move on with the episode. Dearest listener, have you ever given much thought to what exists in the universe? What exists beyond this earth and beyond what we know? I'm sure a great many people have thought about this, all part of the will to understand existence. And as we know so very little, it's like a psychological wound, right? Not having enough information to understand what it all is and what it's all about. So we ask ourselves some important questions in our quest for knowledge about the universe. One such question is, are we alone? Is there other life out there? And if so, what is that life? When I was coming up in the world, there was still a lingering fascination and set of thoughts about the existence of what they call aliens, extraterrestrials. We had The X-Files on television every week, expanding our horizons for what might be out there. And the generation that was touched by curiosities such as the Roswell incident was still knocking about, still insisting something happened, something crashed, still claiming to see bright lights in the sky, unusual objects moving in bizarre and impossible ways, and some even lucky enough to be abducted. We had the Area 51 fascination, this top-secret US military base where everyone is sworn to secrecy. So, of course, the crashed spacecraft from Roswell resides there. Of course, they have alien bodies and alien technology, so of course it's top secret. They're hiding everything from us. This was also the time where we had many other fictions that were based around aliens. Visitations and invasions and all the rest. We had the film E.T. and Independence Day, Alien, Predator, Body Snatchers, Starship Troopers, and about a billion more. Nothing new, of course. People have been writing these fictions for a long time, but it seemed at the time that it was especially present in people's imaginations. The manifestation of all these events that recently took place, all these sightings, all these fascinations. And through all of it, we have, as far as I know, no confirmed evidence that intelligent life exists anywhere else in the universe. When I say intelligent life, what I'm talking about are species that are at least as evolutionarily advanced as humans. And humans are an oddity, really. We are the only species that uses this ultra-enhanced communication. We are the only species that has words. We are the only species that is globally organized. And yes, of course, if we hadn't crushed out our competitors, near relatives, that probably wouldn't be the case. But that's the way it went, and it seems to me as though we're the only species who has followed this path and got this far in the history of Earth. And we have precious few ideas about how all this happened, how humans came to possess this consciousness. And that presents a whole mountain of questions about humans we don't have answers for. So as we don't know exactly what sparked human consciousness, we don't know whether or not it was inevitable. And we don't know that if evolution is left to run its course, that this type of consciousness will develop. And let's put some things into perspective. Humans have been about for not even the blink of an eye in the timescale of the universe. Not even the blink of an eye in the timescale of the planet Earth. They, cosmologists that is, say the universe is somewhere near 14 billion years old, and the Earth is somewhere near 3.5 billion, by the way. Now, it's also worth mentioning that there have been a lot of mass extinction events on Earth. Perhaps the most famous being the more recent KT extinction event some 66 million years ago, where it's supposed by many that the Earth suffered an asteroid impact, which led to the extinction of most plant and animal species on Earth. Something of a cosmic reset? So the continuity of evolution is altered, and in some cases completely cancelled by such events. If we follow evolution back far enough, we can probably say that we are evolved from the very first organisms to ever appear here, though. But primates? Well, we've only been around for something like 60 or 70 million years, not even the blink of an eye. And somehow, in that short time, we developed this higher consciousness, comparatively advanced language and cognition. We crushed our competitors and became the undisputed apex predator of this planet. And there's no other species even remotely close to us. And yes, I can hear your voice in my head. The primary reason for this is that we destroyed our competitors to end up supreme. Of course, we couldn't let our cousins or any other species survive to become more powerful than us, to outcompete us. And so, in the blink of an eye, man came to be. When we look outward at a universe that is nearly 14 billion years old, with the earliest planets forming soon after the Big Bang, we're forced to wonder what else is really out there, and how advanced any other species are. If Earth can evolve humans in less than 4 billion years, what's out there on the planets that are 2 or 3 times as old? We wonder, and we look. But still, we have this conspicuously missing piece of the puzzle. We don't know what sparked this unique consciousness that humans possess. So we have to ask ourselves, are humans a one-off? Let's think about the possibilities here. Firstly, let's state that there is no evidence whatsoever that human-like intelligences exist outside of the Earth. So it wasn't so many years ago now that I wrote a critique on the Drake equation. The Drake equation is basically where Frank Drake, an astrophysicist, devised a formula for estimating the probability of extraterrestrial intelligence. And it must be said that Drake himself stated that his intention wasn't to try and figure anything out, but instead stimulate thought and discussion on the subject. So it was never designed to answer how many and if any extraterrestrial civilizations are out there. But when I first encountered this, I didn't care about that. I thought the idea of trying to calculate what many intelligent species are out there using math was absurd. It's absurd because we don't even know what sparked our own intelligence. Humans very well could be one of a kind. Now, in this, we have a Pandora's box full of questions. But can one podcast episode be as long as an entire lifetime? I think not. So let's skip past thinking about how human intelligence came to be, because it surely has been the subject of philosophy, religion, and science for more than 1 trillions of years. And the conclusion of all of it will be that there is no conclusion at this time. So let's just say we don't know, therefore open possibilities. And as we don't know, we're not going to think about it for the moment. Except to say that because we don't know, humans could very well be one of a kind. Kind of an uncomfortable thought for me, thinking that humans would be the species to spread out across the entire universe, infecting it like a disease. That's a severely misanthropic comment, I know, but there's a purpose for my saying it, so hold on to your butts. So, circling back to the folly of Drake, the way I see it is that before we complicate things, we should first simplify them. So, for me, there are a few distinct possibilities. Firstly, the one that I tend to think, my pet possibility. The universe is teeming with life, and humans aren't exceptional. And you know, reasonable arguments against this do exist. Arguments such as the lack of signals being detected from other worlds. I myself even used to run SETI at home to exist in the effort to detect some of these things. But the fact is, we have detected nothing so far. Which is strange, because we probably should by now. Of course, you can counter that with a huge number of arguments, so nothing for and nothing against, ultimately. Second, life is extremely rare in the universe. There are only so many planets which could potentially support life as we know it. These planets exist in what they call the Goldilocks zone. Not too hot, not too cold, just right. Planets within this zone are candidates for planets that could support life. We are, of course, very limited in our ability to identify these planets, as the rest of the universe is all so very, very far away and so very, very hard to see. What we do know, though, is that planets do exist outside of our solar system, and of those planets, some are likely within this Goldilocks zone. The question then becomes, of those planets, how many have even basic life on them? So that's a whole thing, and life certainly could exist on some of these planets. We just don't know that for sure. And even if we did find out that life exists on one of these planets, there's no way of telling from that single point of data how common life is. And now, what's behind door number 3? The one that saddens me. Humans are the only species that exists with this advanced intelligence and cognition. Definitely not my favorite, as I have an aversion to exceptionalist thinking. And remember, as we don't know for sure what gave birth to higher intelligence, we can't even make educated guesses about its existence elsewhere. Humans are alone, supported, so far, by the lack of evidence to the contrary. Oh, and by the way, it's supposed that other forms of life could also exist, non-carbon-based life forms, that is. But you can throw that thought away for our purposes. I just felt as though I had to acknowledge it because it stands out as an omission. Ultimately, though, we're right back to where we started. We know nothing. So let's take a walk down one of these paths. Let's say that humans are exceptional. Let's say that humans will, if we survive ourselves, go on to colonize the entire universe with our life type. Being so misanthrope as I am, I'd personally hate to see that be the truth. Nonetheless, let's look at the future from the perspective that humans are the most advanced species in the entire universe. Let's use our causality training to examine and make predictions about the future. Before we get stuck in on this, it's worth saying that I'm guessing that you can tell by now that I'm a Westerner. I'm descended from the Celtic folk. So the things I'm going to talk about will largely come from the perspective of a Westerner. And I will be largely looking at the Western world because we are leading the charge, despite tearing ourselves apart. And just by the way, that's another comment that goes along with some other things that I've said. Things I've hinted at go along with that remark, and it's a very important subject for the future. For now, though, let's have a look at the current state of play and see if we can't make some predictions about the future, and especially about the future that sees humans spread out into the entire universe. And I'm not going to be exhaustive here, by no means. Just a few broad strokes to move us along because this is a vast and complex subject. When I think about the future of the species, even on a short timescale, even thinking about what could be in my lifetime, I'm drawn to thinking about two things especially. First, the subtraction of personal liberties and the increasing power of the state. And secondly, the dumbing down of people. Those two things go hand in hand, of course. If people weren't so dumbed down, if people knew how to think instead of what to think, the loss of liberty and freedoms would be slower, at least. And on that note, it's worth getting sidetracked for a moment to talk about how these changes often come about. Specifically, I want to draw your attention to changes that happen over long periods of time. And I'm going to use a still relevant situation to do it, because I think it serves well to make this point. So we all remember bat virus, right? Or COVID number 19, as you may know it. During this time, we saw governments massively overstep, cancelling liberty left, right, and centre. Basic human rights were thrown out the window by many governments. And all for the sake of keeping you safe. Couple of problems there. The government actually doesn't care about you, so that's farcical on its face. And of course, no surprise that many of the people in these governments were operating completely hypocritically. Of course, all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. That, of course, was entirely predictable from the get, but I digress. What I wanted to talk about specifically was the coercion that was used to get people to play ball. The corrupt courts around here ruled that it was lawful for an employer to require you to be vaccinated. This actually debased the court system in the country and showed it to be corrupt with developments that came later. The point is that the state was all for effectively forcing people to be injected with some rushed out vaccine that didn't have proper scientific validation. There was no time for any real scientific studies on the thing. So the government held that everyone should be vaccinated, and that it's fine and even good that employers can force you to get vaccinated to retain your employment. So that was the state of it. And the propaganda engine was in overdrive, and people just ate it up because they've been dumbed down. But the important thing, my real point, is that imagine what the future holds for the children of this country. Growing up in a world where it's fine, it's okay, it's even seen as good that the government can effectively force people to get injections. Imagine that being normal. So what happens when these children grow up? They existed in a world where it was good and fine and normal for the government to inject people. Their parents didn't resist. The masses and the propaganda engine beat down anyone who disagreed. So that's all fine now. That's normal. And this is what I'm talking about when I talk about changes that happen slowly over time. Right, so now we've got this generation coming up in the world that thinks all of this is fine, which makes it even more likely that it's going to be seen as fine and normal in the future. Just one more step down the slippery slope of relinquishing liberty to the state. And look, you might think this is all fine. You might say that this is paranoia. That is, of course, the voice of your engineered mind speaking. This is logical and rational, and only those two things. So while the tactics described above may actually be for the greater good, and in future similar actions may also be for the greater good, but it only takes one wrong idea. It only takes one malintended humanoid for things to go horribly wrong only one. And let me ask you something. Can you name a single power or technology humans have had or developed that hasn't been used for harm at some point? Name one. Just one. I know you can't, because that has never happened. So my overall point is that even very significant changes can happen slowly, over generations, and slip by unnoticed. Especially when it's this pattern of gradually taking rights away, gradually empowering the state, of gradually normalizing things that people wouldn't stand for unless they were trained to. These are some ills built into the process of slowly evolving human organization. And we need to keep our fingers on the pulse. We need to be vigilant with our study of what's going on. Think about human nature for a moment. Humans are, on average, far more reactive than they are proactive. And this might be the ultimate undoing of the entire species. It's understandable because we don't know what's to come. We don't want to waste time and energy and resources being proactive about things that aren't a guarantee. Especially when we can just react to what happens instead. But I argue that we should take better note of what's going on because we can make very accurate predictions by carefully observing. We couple our observations with our basic training in causality, and we can predict the future. And this can be done with a great deal of accuracy. We need to observe and take note and inform what are hopefully accurate predictions, because soon, and before you even realize, it's going to be too late. Earlier in this episode, I mentioned how people are cowed by the threat of attack. This is on the increase. The social engineering machine is working very hard to get people to think certain things and train them to affect attacks and defend certain things independently of direct instruction. Things are going perfectly. Again, think long and hard about how people are being programmed with what to think instead of being programmed with how to think. Remember, the state doesn't want or need you to think for yourself. It wants you to think what it wants you to think. Then you are the perfect sheep, the perfect slave. And you might fall into a classic cognitive bias here, known as appeal to authority, I believe. That's hilarious to me, except it's not, because if you're a mind slave, you're hurting me, and you're hurting the future. You're not just hurting the future for me, you're hurting the future for yourself and everyone else. And if you've procreated, well, the future looks bleak indeed. And I want you to especially think about how there is us and there is them. Governments and who they call the elite often tip their hands with their hypocrisy. And I hate using this term elite because, for me, it means exceptionally skilled. Not just born into wealth and power like most of the so-called elites are. So it feels like a total misnomer to me. And yes, it does actually have that definition. But the problem is that people are fooled into thinking there is only us. We're all together in this and everything's great. Your interests are mine too. This is the danger of programming. Have you ever noticed how these so-called elites completely isolate themselves from the rest of the population, by the way? Have you ever noticed how the very first thing new money does is isolate themselves from the rest of the population? There is us, and there is them. Make no mistake about it. And if you're not rich, you're born at a severe disadvantage. You have to work an order of magnitude harder than any of these elites ever will in their entire lives to get anywhere at all. And even then, you still require some amount of luck. I'm sorry to say, but that's the absolute truth. There are plenty of capable and brilliant people who don't make it anywhere because they aren't born into advantage and never get lucky. The lie we like to tell each other is that this world is a meritocracy, when it's actually anything but. Money trumps merit. Power trumps merit. People do make it out, but most of the time they just become one of them. Because life is good as them. You no longer have to rub elbows with the riffraff of the world. You don't even have to live in the real world anymore. You've graduated to another world entirely. And life in that world is very good. I acknowledge that all life is competition. People and businesses and governments all compete with each other. The competition for resources is the foundation of evolution. And so these entities are all evolving in order to outcompete each other. The force of evolution always results in one entity reigning supreme over all others. And this scales all the way up, from competition between the smallest organisms to nation states. And one day, we may be competing out in space with other species in the same way we've competed with other species here on Earth. The question is, will we be the species that reigns supreme? Let's put a pin in that thought for now, because we still have some more groundwork to do before we get there, if we even get there. Let's start by making observations about what's going on right now. Observations about some things that stand out for me in the context of this episode. The most concerning thing I see, by far, is what I've said several times now. People are, more and more, being programmed with what to think. Again, not being taught how to think, being taught what to think. These people I often refer to as automatons. It's complete mind slavery, brain deadery. And I said in episode 1, in this modern world, no one has the time to be human anymore. No one has the time to think anymore, evidently. Just give that over to the state, give it over to the machine, the hive mind. I'm too busy to think. I've got far too much to do. Of course, one of the absolutely rotten and nasty byproducts of capitalism is that the world is now about quantity, not quality. Couple that with the reduction in access to resources? Well, what you're left with is a mass of people spending all their most valuable time grinding away just to stay alive. And boy, is it tempting to bite into capitalism now that I've brought it up. But as I've got all these pins to be used, I'm just going to put a pin in that subject for now. But you know, you'll do well to note that the average person has most of their waking hours occupied by generating resources. The elites, many of them, never even work a day in their lives. And even when they do, their work looks a lot different to yours. The reason I've said this is that I want you to think about how free these so-called elites are to explore spirituality, existence, to explore things we spoke about in episode 1. Just imagine what you could know now if you were free to learn. Just imagine who you'd be if you knew. Just imagine that. Now back to our observations. Let's just charge through. People are more and more getting programmed with what to think. This is largely done through the media, and society employs plenty of carrot and stick measures to entice or force people into it. One of the thoughts people are programmed with is that these thoughts they're programmed with are the correct thoughts. The horror. If you're not horrified, imagine my horror. Imagine the horror of a person who has spent countless time observing and analysing the world. Spare a thought for me. And you know, this is one of those things that you get better at with practice. The mechanism is quite simple. You observe, you make predictions, and then you observe the accuracy of your predictions. The more you do this, the more accurate your predictions become. I've done this my entire life. So let's predict some basic things. And let's just ram this out. I predict that because people are becoming less and less resistant to governments taking away their liberties, governments will take more liberties away in future. I predict that because non-elites are thinking for themselves less and less every day, non-elites will suffer a decline in cognitive function. I predict that because the stick measures used to suppress free thought and opposition are getting used more and more and are more acceptable as trained through the engineering machine, they will be used more often in future and new sticks will be developed for this purpose. I predict that as fewer and fewer entities are owning more and more of the world will end up being owned by a very few entities, if not a single entity, and this in turn will result in the entire non-elite population being completely enslaved. not that they aren't already. I predict that, as people have so far failed to recognize the inertia of capitalism and government control in this time, the progress towards total enslavement will go by largely unnoticed. I predict that, as fear has been used as the primary tool for manipulating people and used to manufacture justification, it will continue to be used for these purposes into the future. I predict that, as non-elite individuals are becoming more and more obsolete due to the advances in technology, the value of the individual will slide to almost zero. And don't forget to remember, dearest listener, the reality I'm describing to you now exists as potential. And think about this in the context of what I've previously spoken about. Just some basic thoughts about possibilities. Take either the universe constantly cycling through expansion and collapse, and or alternate realities exist and get created all the time, etc. In both of these very real possibilities, the future I'm describing is inevitable. The only question is, are we existing in one of the realities where it comes to pass? I could talk on the subject of where humanity is headed for at least 50 billion years. And I just ran through a whole bunch of stuff I could talk about at length just to keep us moving. Instead of trying to explain to you what I think and why, I'm now going to take shortcuts. I'm going to skip past many explanations and fall back on assertions so we can get to where we're going. And by the way, there is little doubt that I will go into details on these things in future, certainly in this episode's addendum. But the truth is, as I'm not doing this to get paid or anything like that, I find it difficult to justify the energy expenditure. So let the assertions begin. People are being dumbed down. People are being conditioned and programmed with what to think, and more as we go. Those that get led around by the nose like beasts of burden become the autonomous agents of larger entities, and independently do their bidding. This is social engineering, of course, and its increasing intensity is perceptible. And I would love to dispel the myth that the elite class cares about you. They absolutely don't. And they love and depend on the illusion that they do care about you. They do things in your best interests, right? False. Non-elites are becoming obsolete with the advancement of technology. I'm not going to lie to you now. Humans are being turned into slaves, slaves for the elites. And soon enough, there will even be far too many slaves. I could argue that there already are far too many. And I predict a dramatic population reduction in future. How that comes about is another tantalizing subject. But for now, let's just say it's coming. So, non-elites are being turned into sheep. They're being dumbed down and programmed. They're turning into bots. Capitalism is making it so that access to resources is increasingly more difficult. Also, because of capitalism, fewer and fewer entities own more and more of the earth and what's on it. I see the mathematical certainty of capitalism. And with the runaway human population, the speed of this process is going to exponentially increase. Money is a complex system, and its intertwining with law multiplies the complexity. But over a long enough period of time, the whole earth will be owned by a single entity because of capitalism. It's important here to understand that a grouping of entities can be seen as an entity itself in this context. So I guess, in summary, what's happening is non-elites, common folk, are being dumbed down and conditioned to be agents of the elite's agenda. These people will soon find it impossible to own anything. And since you have to pay to be alive, the future for a non-elite is one of total servitude. You'll complete tasks for money, or whatever replaces it, then you'll have to pay that money to whatever entity owns your shelter. And you have to pay for food and everything else too, of course. The funny thing is that your labor will be a closed loop. You'll work only to sustain your existence and nothing more. And, as per usual, surplus energy generated will be extracted by the elite class. All the while, the elites do whatever they like without a care in the world. We're in the final transition period. But it's really just a reversion to an old way, actually. It's a reversion to something that looks a lot like Sparta or Rome at times, for example. It's a conversion of the non-elite world into a total serfdom, and it's working remarkably well. It's going great for the so-called elites. You know, I stressed over this last portion of the podcast, because this whole thing is so vast and complex that it would probably take me months to present you with sufficient detail to explain what I see. So I had to admit defeat, because again, as I'm not getting anything out of this, it's really hard to justify the energy expenditure. So let's skip straight to it. When we finally move out into space, the human population will be, by and large, slaves. Slaves to one entity, which is actually just an amalgamation of other entities, but slaves nonetheless. So what happens when we finally move out into space? What will the state of the species be at that time? Think about it. If most of the population are simply slaves, then humanity will resemble something like an ant or bee colony. It will be this efficient machine designed to propagate the species, and not much more, unless you're an elite. This might actually be necessary and inevitable, because what we know is that we only exist to reproduce and spread. A machine that does this efficiently is humanity on the fast track to infesting the universe. And remember, ultimately, what you are is an individual of a species that wants to dominate and consume everything else, wants to spread out and convert energy into greater numbers. This is the way of life. We're ultimately existing to continue our existence and increase our numbers. That, again, is another huge subject, and by the way, the only thing I've ever got from humans that's worth a damn is music. So yes, you can argue that we're here to have all these experiences and enjoy life, etc. But from a biological perspective, all that stuff is surplus. We're only here to propagate. And let's think about what other species might be out there in the universe. Fiction mostly portrays extraterrestrials in one of two ways. The enlightened and peaceful beings that do no harm, or the conquerors, the destroyers of worlds. As a species that is on a quest for resources and will happily eat humanity and the whole Earth in furtherance of their species. To me, the latter is far more likely of any species that is advanced enough to traverse the vast distances of space. Because you must recognize that, though the universe is incomprehensibly large, it still only has a finite amount of energy and resources, as far as I can tell. And in the same way we crushed out our competitors on Earth, other species who get here should be advanced enough to recognize that this is the way of things. Any species that can compete for a resource you need is a species worth dominating and or destroying. And let's face it, if an alien species were to show up here tomorrow, we would be overmatched. It wouldn't even be a contest. If you can traverse the vast distances of space, you'll certainly be able to wipe out a single primitive species. Hell, we can't even traverse space, and yet we're capable of, at any moment, destroying all life on this planet. So I think the fairy tale fantasy of a peaceful and good-willed alien species is a fantasy of the highest order. But again, we don't know what life exists outside of Earth. I believe there's heaps, and I believe it's extremely naive to think species that can get here would be peaceful. But hey, maybe all they'd want is our music. We'd have to give them everything but reggae, of course, so that we don't accidentally give them cause for war. But yeah, I think it's foolish to ever think extraterrestrial species would be peaceful should they arrive. And let's take off our rose-tinted glasses. The universe is a violent and hostile place. It's not all wet dreams and fuzzy feelings. Just look around you. It's also interesting to think about if maybe All species of our type commonly follow the same pattern. And remember, all thoughts are inevitable. Therefore, all so-called man-made systems are inevitable thoughts elsewhere. It's interesting to wonder if other species of our type have followed the same evolutionary path in a social sense. Do we all develop democracy, then pervert it? Do we all develop capitalism, then use it to subjugate the species? Again, it's nice to think that humans are exceptional, but if life does exist elsewhere, the odds of that being true are about, infinity to one? Of course, that's definitely not to say that we've come up with the best systems. I can pretty much guarantee that isn't true. And also, the way these things progress has something to do with the individuals of the species too. Again though, all thoughts and all combination of thoughts are inevitable. Therefore, the path a species takes might simply come down to a quirk of timing and luck. Westerners resist thinking in this way because what it really all means is that no one is special. And people are in love with the idea that they can be special. When in actual fact, the best anyone can actually do is be first. This talk of extraterrestrials brings up the question of how humanity would approach other species too. Should we survive ourselves long enough to get to that point? It's going to be pretty funny, pretty ironic, showing up at another planet after the Earth's resources are all but depleted. What will the so-called indigenes of current Earth think when they are dominating and destroying the species of another planet for resources? How will they reconcile the logic of their positions then? I'd love to be there to see that. But of course, we know how it would go, one of those moments where things are conveniently forgotten, cast aside. But before we get there, a few things probably have to happen anyway. First would probably be one world government. Check that box, as it's already in progress. And yeah, it's interesting to think what would happen if, let's say, for the sake of argument, the United States develops a technology and is able to get off the Earth first without sharing. Do they turn around and lay waste to the rest? Or leave everyone else stranded? I probably would. That's a neat little thought to play with anyway. And it entices dreams of a utopia in space where all the dog water of Earth doesn't exist. Currently, a lot of space exploration is done with cooperation between nations. And it's all very well and good to play along for now, play nice while it doesn't really matter, while we're still advancing. But that could change in a single moment. And there are very good motivators for such a change. We'll just have to see what comes and what happens. And remember, all life is competition. Entities compete for everything. Cooperation is only so useful. And look, I don't actually know what the future holds for humanity. All I've been doing is making predictions based on observations. And I've had to state many things as fact just to be able to communicate in a way that is vaguely efficient. So what does taking a slave population out into space look like anyway? Well, on a colony that requires life support systems, you'd be completely screwed. Of course, you probably wouldn't be there other than to extract resources, so at least the entity in control will have some reason to keep you around. But of course, they'll leverage your dependency to do whatever they like. And talking about this, it's worth bringing up the fact that it's actually quite necessary for this species to get off the planet at some point. Given the history of mass extinction events on Earth, it's imperative that we spread out as soon as possible. On that note, I'm always amused by people that don't seem to understand that, at any moment, all life could end. People seem to suppress this reality, people who are prone to fear. But to live in fear is to not live at all. Anything can happen at any moment. And to live in a bubble? To insulate yourself from reality? What do we call that? Weakness? And in the context of an extinction event on Earth, we have some ability to see some things coming and some ability to prevent some types of events that cause mass extinction. But we're far from able to prevent everything. And especially since there's certainly things that happen in this universe that we're yet to even see. So, getting off Earth, the ruling entity will have all the power to set the parameters for what goes on out there. So then, the key is to wrestle back some power for the people. And with people trending towards brain-dead automation? I'm afraid that this tale is one of bleak caution. Let's also acknowledge some other paths. As common folk will become almost obsolete, so too will all humans if the machines wake up. This is a very old tale by now, one that is becoming more and more relevant by the day. And let's make no mistake, we don't have artificial intelligence yet. What they currently call AI is a total misnomer. These are simply robots, programmed for automation, and we've had robots since at least the Industrial Revolution. So let's be clear, we have yet to create artificial intelligence, but we're creating ever more complex robots. And as everything exists as potential, it's probably inevitable that true AI will come about someday. That's a good news, bad news kind of situation. Good news is that we've done it and we can do so much with it. Bad news is that most humans will become obsolete overnight. So what are some key takeaways here? Well, first, I advise turning off the screens. Get away from the media or work to transform it into something good. Put books in your children's hands. And you need to start telling them that there are many, many entities that are fighting for their minds. Fighting to get them to think what they want them to think. Fighting for control of their thoughts. Tell them to pay attention to the world around them. Teach them to think critically. Teach them to think for themselves. And reject the proposition that governments should be able to control what you think. Reject the proposition that unless you go along, you won't be able to succeed. Reject laws that curtail your rights. Especially reject laws that are just tools for the state to suppress thought. And these laws are so thinly veiled, I'm truly appalled that they became laws to begin with. Sorry, friends, but I'm ashamed of this species. I'm ashamed of all the weakness and stupidity that has allowed us to get to this point. And I especially want you to remember, you folk who are the huddled center mass of society, everything's all very well and good until it's you on the wrong end of it. You might be happy to support certain laws now, losses of liberties, all in the name of keeping you safe, but the power you're giving over will almost certainly be in the hands of someone that doesn't align with your interests one day. And do you really not care about your children? Is it enough for you to have simply produced them? Or do you think you should do things to improve the world they live in? The species is going in the wrong direction. Wake up.